It's Luckies! Really long list of movies! Welcome back to another episode of Lucky's Really Long List of Movies, where I, Lucky Damn Day, tackle my really long list of movies that I've never seen before. And each month, we break down this list into categories. Last month was movies that make people scream at me. And remember when I said I was going to do like a little mini-sode and announce my winner, and then I was going to like make an award and do all this shit? Well, I got sick. So I'm just going to tell you now what my favorite movie of last month was, and then we'll move on to this month's category of cuffing season. So last month we covered Pulp Fiction, we covered Parasite, The Matrix, and The Godfather. And which movie clung on to me most? Which movie can I still not stop thinking about? It's actually two movies. I literally cannot stop thinking about Parasite, and I cannot stop thinking about The Godfather, like the making of The Godfather. And of course, I see Godfather stuff everywhere, so it's like, that could also be a reason why I think about it all the time. But Parasite also, it's almost like opening up my third eye. That's what Parasite felt like. So those are the winners. Yay! All right. Didn't need a mini-sode for that. So moving on to our second movie of this month's category, Cuffing Season. And I decided to do Cuffing Season in September because this is where we all start to look for our wintertime snuggle buddies. So last week we covered the Titanic, and that could be the reason I'm sick. And today we're going to be moving on to In the Mood for Love. Yes, I'm so excited for this movie. I'm so excited to watch this movie. I'm so excited to look into this movie. I'm so excited to experience this movie. This movie is all over every single algorithm I have. I've seen clips on Instagram, TikTok, and then also the coolest people I know. This is their favorite film. And so I need to understand, like, what is all the buzz about? And then I go into the comment sections of these clips, right? And I'm like, what is this? What am I looking at? Why do I keep seeing this really pretty couple all over my For You page all the time? And then I look into the comments and literally people just go, this movie is just a vibe. I don't know how else to explain it. It's a vibe. And that was wild to me. So of course I slapped it right on my list, and I'm so excited I get to cover it this week. So let's get into it, babies. Okay, so I'm coming at you with some sickness today, and I'm super sorry. I just feel like something is creeping up on me. I don't know what it is. Was I bit by the love bug? No, I was bit by something else, I'm sure. I feel like absolute shit. But what better activity to do than to talk about a super glamorous, heart-filled, totally engulfing movie? And that's the only thing I'd want to do right now is just talk about this movie right now, get this podcast nice and situated for y'all, and then take a big fat nap. Oh, I can't wait. Well, this movie was humbling and so cool. People were right. This movie is a vibe. In the Mood for Love gave us everything. Storyline, costuming, amazing interiors and exteriors, era-specific office spaces, telling neckties, cool music, cigarette cinema. Man, that would have been a cool name for this podcast. Fuck, shit. Anyway. Time-stamping food dishes and faceless infidelity and so many secrets to juggle. So if you saw my little reaction video on my socials, you will know that not only was I speechless for a majority of the time due to all the yumminess, my eyes were eating. There was a lot to feast on. But I also missed out on one of the biggest plot points of the movie. I didn't know that the spouses were cheating on each other with the other person's spouse. Did that make sense? If you know the movie, it did. But if you didn't, let me give you a little recap before we jump in. And I really have been liking doing this recap in under a minute, so I'll give that another shot. And for this recap for In the Mood for Love, I'm going to be doing this in a small town gossip format. So here we go. Have you heard? Mr. Chow and Mrs. Chan are probably having an affair, but I don't blame them because Mr. Chow's wife is porking Mrs. Chan's husband under the same roof in the same town, and they were sloppy about it, buying the same ties and rare handbags for the spouse and the secret lover, and they were neighbors. Yeah, so Mr. Chow and Mrs. Chan kept meeting up with each other over food and moody walks at night to hash out how their spouse's affair even happened. Well, they ended up falling in love with each other and even kind of planned to run away together to Singapore, but Mrs. Chan was too late and Mr. Chow had to leave without her. I know, super sad. And they kept haunting each other in a distant future, and I heard from a monk that Mr. Chow was even seen whispering a secret into a hole at Angkor Wat, the Buddhist temple in Cambodia. And then I also heard that Mrs. Chan, she actually came to Mr. Chow's apartment and somehow got in there and then left a cigarette butt and took her like little shoes back. And then he like found out and he was like a little like freaked out about it, but also like still like, oh my god, I can't believe I missed her. But anyway, I think they fucked, made love, and they're still madly in love with each other. But you know, you didn't hear all that from me. All right. Did I mention one of the symptoms I'm feeling is like my throat hurts? Oh, I'm sure I have that COVID strain. It's literally called flirt. How on theme. Anyway. But now let's move on to my first take of this movie. So how I feel now after the research is a bit deeper than how I felt after seeing it for the first time. I love the movie. I love the movie, by the way. That's just to say, I love the movie. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was awesome. I knew there was a lot of stuff I was missing while I was watching it the first time, but it was a lot for me to take in, and I enjoyed researching it. It was really cool. It was really nice. So I'm going to play you my first take. I went from watching the credits to being on mic. So I watched the movie, had my heart broken, and then I came here right on mic to just record and tell you my thoughts and feelings about it. While you're listening, just please keep in mind that I was given a lot and my brain memory is on the rocks with a twist of lime carcass out for all of my Real Housewives of Beverly Hills fans. So it's very safe to say that this movie was over my head a bit at first, but it was a beauty to drown in. No complaints. So, without further ado, Fisher-Price presents Baby's First Reaction to In the Mood for Love. So, I literally just finished watching In the Mood for Love for the first time ever in my life. Not the last time. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I'm gonna have to watch this movie over and over and over again, for a lot of reasons. One, I did spend a lot of time reading the subtitles, and I am a slow reader, and I feel like I might have missed out on some, like, details. The main lady, whoo, she was really fucking good. She was really good. The guy was also good. He was a bit more intense than I thought he would be. Like, at the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, he's just, like, a squishy little guy, but then he just kind of gets a little bit more, like, rustic, is that the word? Like, he gets more like, I don't know, he's also really fucking cool. Oh god. And they never got together. We didn't even get to see them kiss. They didn't even kiss. Ooh, but that tension, you could cut it with a knife. Ooh, a chainsaw, you would cut it with a chainsaw. Oh, god, I can't believe they didn't even kiss. Or so far as we know, they didn't even kiss. We didn't see it. We didn't see any kissing. We didn't see any smooching. But they did hold hands. Ugh, they held hands. And then they also hung out in the rain. And then she cried on his shoulder so many times. And he was like, it's okay. Sorry if my voice sounds like it's going all over the place and all around the mic, because I'm melting in my chair. That's what's happening. So, oh, so good. It was so good. It was just as good as I thought it would be. I feel like I'm intoxicated. Oh my god, it was just so fucking pretty. And I can't believe it was done in the year 2000. I'm still digesting it. What a meal this movie was. I'm going to need to take a nap to digest this. I'm going to need to walk 3,000 miles on the top of my own mountain to digest this. It was so good. And I'm sorry that's all I can say right now, but it was. And it was a shorter movie. The last movie that was close to this runtime was Pulp Fiction. Everything else was around the 2-hour mark, 3-hour mark. And to just sit down and see it all pan out in an hour and a half is nice. Damn. Well, that's my first take, y'all. Sorry, it's vague and just full of moans and groans. Maybe I should drink water. Yeah, maybe I'm just really dehydrated because I was like drooling at the mouth. But like, yay, in the mood for love. Okay, well, sayonara, suckers. In just a few seconds, I'm going to come back a changed, more educated woman. All right, goodbye. Aw, aren't I precious? And remember, during this little first take, I had no idea I was missing one of the biggest plot points. Like, I didn't know that they were both getting cheated on by their spouses because their spouses were sleeping with each other. I didn't know that. And it's incredible I didn't pick up on that because it's introduced to you really early in the movie and then it's laid on thick throughout the entire movie and I just didn't catch on. Oh, and I don't know if I mentioned this in my first take. Yeah, I could go back and I could listen to it, but I've listened to my first take so many times, I don't know if I can comprehend my words anymore. So I don't know if I said this. I don't know if I said this, but when I was watching this movie for the first time, not only did I miss out on one of the biggest plot points, I thought that this movie was jumping around space and time. I thought we were doing like a little non-linear Pulp Fiction type thing. And then I also thought maybe we were like dancing around in different universes. I don't know. I don't know. I just had a lot of expectations for this movie and it outsmarted me a little bit, but that's okay. I can't even listen to myself talk on a recording and decipher what I'm saying. So it's okay. Back to my first take. I'll just start with saying that it is nice to be a little harmless dum-dum here and there. But you know, I'm sure I'm not the only non-Cantonese, Shanghainese speaking person out there that likes pretty things to be distracted and a bit lost after seeing this movie for the first time, right? I'm not the only one. But I do know there are a lot of people out there from all speaking languages and walks of life that were stricken and changed forever after watching Mr. Chow and Mrs. Chan walk away from each other time and time again. And I'm always jealous of these people that can do that. I wish I could watch a masterpiece like this made by an auteur. That is Wong Kar-wai. Oh, what's an auteur? I don't even know if I'm saying it right. But it's a fancy cinema speak for author of your own movie. Thanks to the French language for that fancy word. But I wish I could watch a work like this and just connect body, mind, and soul on the first take, and then leave the theater or whatever and just be able to like discuss it right then and there. But you know, that's just not how my brain works. And I do enjoy getting to research and going back to review everything I missed. That in itself is a cool feeling, you know, to be like, oh my God, I see it. And I thought it was interesting that I assumed that the timeline was out of order, Pulp Fiction style. I don't know. Mrs. Chan's dresses, the Ki Pao's, were so cool. And they seemed to be something like a really rich person would wear. And her husband was always buying everything for everybody. So it seemed like that they had a lot of money. So I just assumed that she was doing that obnoxious rich person thing and only wearing something they own once and never reusing or rewearing it to prevent some stupid rich person dress code faux pas, whatever. But how dare I think something so shallow of the deeply conflicted and consistently challenged Mrs. Chan? And maybe if I was paying attention to what everyone else was wearing, I would have maybe understood the timeline a bit better. Like Mr. Chow's funky cool silk ties. Oh yeah. Those bad boys had some chill personality and also played a big role in the whole tie slash purse trick that was mentioned a lot in the movie. And I didn't catch on to the many tells in this movie that just screamed that their spouses are sleeping with each other. Yeah, I missed the whole scandal of it all. This movie is a masterpiece. This movie teaches story writers, directors, auteurs, and actors how to make a good fucking movie. And it is loved and admired and studied by so many. And honestly, that tells me, no matter who you are or how schmancy your cinematic intellect is, we all love some hot, juicy, messy, messy, messy-ass gossip and true love with sweet aesthetics and good food. All right, so let's talk about the director, the writer, the auteur, Wong Kar-wai. So In the Mood for Love was the first Wong Kar-wai film I have ever seen in my life. Wong Kar-wai wrote and directed this film, like I just freaking said. And me oh my, I really liked learning about his other movies. I saw clips, not like the full movies, yet. I saw clips from Chungking Express from 1994, and I saw that blonde wig with red Kurt Cobain-esque sunglasses and that pink cigarette, and I added it right onto my list. Honestly, all of his movies are going on the list because they all look so freaking cool. They all look so cool. The characters always look cool. A lot of the movies take place in certain time periods. And if they don't, then they're still shot present day, which is like in the 90s and stuff. And the storytelling and the moodiness and the deep meanings and such. So In the Mood for Love takes place in Hong Kong in the 1960s, specifically in the Shanghainese neighborhoods. And that's how Wong Kar-wai grew up. His family moved from Shanghai to Hong Kong in the 1960s. And I was reading about why a lot of people were making that move from Shanghai to Hong Kong in the 1960s. And it wasn't for change of scenery. I can tell you that fucking right now. It was a lot for me to take in. So in Shanghai, there was a lot of violence, disruption, and other socio-political reasons and events that just got more and more horrific. But for real, I have so many questions about all of that. Like, one of the biggest ones is, like, why do I feel like I'm just learning about this now in my 30s, right? Like, I feel like I should have learned about this in high school. It seems like hundreds of thousands of people were killed. And it's a lot to take in. And I had another big question. Why did my stage combat class from acting school make us start every class with a specific warm-up called, and I quote, the Mao's? And it was created by a General Mao. And it always felt a little strange to do. And it was like also really militant, the Mao's were. The department head at this acting school that I went to, which is always in a lawsuit because it's not a real school, I think. Anyway, the department head of the stage combat department said that he wanted us to do these like little Mao exercises because General Mao said it was the perfect warm-up to warm up the entire body. And like, no, it didn't. That school also wanted us to do a lot of yoga, and literally every class that wasn't stage combat, you know, like started with some kind of intense physical warm up. I'm telling you, like for some of the classes, we had to do planks for like minutes while reciting Shakespeare. And we had to do that every day. And it was really physically grueling, but it really did warm us up. But then we would go to like stage combat, which is like the most physically demanding class of all. And then we would have to do the Mao's, which was like touching our toes and stuff. And we all had to count out loud. And we all had to memorize the mouths, which was like 10 different exercises. And then we had to like stand in front of the class and lead it. And it was very militant. And it was really, really weird. Not to talk shit, you know, but like, what the fuck was that? God, I have a lot to look into now on my own time. But geez Louise. So, And the Mood for Love takes place in Hong Kong in the 1960s in the Shanghainese neighborhoods. Anyway, Wong Kar-wai talks about how there were Shanghainese neighborhoods and communities in Hong Kong, right? Like, the Shanghainese people didn't really go out of their way to, like, blend in with the rest of the Hong Kong public at the time, you know? They were doing their own thing. They hung out with each other in their own houses, spoke their own languages, ate their own foods and their own dishes, had their own culture. But let me tell you, it looks like that they didn't mind their own business. Yeah, Wong Kar-wai talks about all the gossip he would hear within this super tight-knit community. And that is a big old part of In the Mood for Love. What a fucking treat. So, for starters, the POV, us, the audience, we are looking through the lens of, like, the neighbors, right? Like, we are the neighbors. So the camera shots, sometimes they look like we're peeking through windows and other structures within someone's apartment, peeking around the corner and stuff. We hear people through doors and the walls. We hear what people say when someone leaves the room. And throughout the entire movie, Mr. Wong and Mrs. Chan are trying everything they can to not start up rumors. But it doesn't look like their spouses are trying to do the same. They are messy, 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 messy. Jesus Christ, at least our two main characters are trying to, like, it almost seems like that they're more scared of the town finding out, or like they're more scared of like the communities finding out about their budding love for each other rather than their cheating spouses, which I get it. So Wong Kar-wai talks about how the movie focuses on the rumors, the gossips, and the secrets, and like how long we can hold on to secrets and stuff, rather than making this movie about the affairs, because he said that's boring. And he's kind of right. There are already so many movies about affairs, you know? So yeah, navigating a scandal in a community where eyes and ears are open and lips are loose is like really cool. And it takes place in 1960s Hong Kong and is directed by a cool director like Wong Kar-wai. Jesus Christ, this is way better than any affair story I've seen so far, right? No, I'm sure there's some affair movies out there that I'm just like, no, that's a fucking classic. But there was a critic who said something interesting. His name's Peter Travers. Sorry, I said his name like that. But he said, in the hands of a hack, In the Mood for Love could have been a snickering sex farce. In the hands of Wong Kar-wai, the film is alive with delicacy and feeling. And isn't that the damn truth? This could have turned into an Adam Sandler 2009 flick real quick. No shade, Adam. But, you know. If this was one of those Adam Sandler movies, it would be present day, right? And it would, like, take place at a resort or a cruise or something. Russell Brand would be in it, playing that same character he always plays, you know? Was that too harsh? I don't think that was harsh. I don't have a problem with Adam Sandler movies, you know, I guess. But I think y'all know exactly what the fuck Peter means. Yeah, I think we were picking up what you're putting down, Peter. Like, Wong Kar-wai is one of those directors. So, if you're at a party, right? You're at a party and you're talking to somebody and they're like, what's your favorite movie? And you go like, oh, well, you know, it's In the Mood for Love is one of my favorite Wong Kar-wai movies. A lot of people say it's about the affair, but that's too boring and a bit droll and kind of undercuts the auteur's actual intentions for the film. It's more about the gossip, I would say. You know, just a peek into the life of the Shanghai. Because after a while, people stop listening to you because they're like, oh, this person's too cool. If I bring up any of my Adam Sandler movies, they're gonna rip my fucking face off. So yeah, so now you have one of those movies to bring up at a party. I'm gonna, I'm going to do it at my next party. Oh, I got so many parties I'm so invited to that I'm just going to go there and socialize with the people that want to talk to me. Oh, yeah. Woo. We'll come back to Wong Kar-wai. I want to talk a little bit about Maggie and Tony. I'm going to be talking about all of them throughout the rest of the episode. Oh, just because. They're all so good. Okay. Can we talk about Tony and Maggie, please? Yeah, we can. It's my podcast. I can do whatever I want. So we have the two main actors. We have Maggie Cheung as Su Lee Zhen, or as we know her, Mrs. Chan. And then we have Tony Leung as Chow Mo-won, or as we know him, Mr. Chow. So let's start with Maggie. Hello, Maggie Cheung. Jeez Louise, she's so good. Wong Kar-wai wanted to bring Maggie onto this project because he said that she has this air about herself, and she also carried herself in a very similar way to the ladies of the 1960s. Apparently, she's the opposite of her character, Mrs. Chan. Maybe she's like a bit more kooky and stuff, but Mrs. Chan is very reserved and elegant and poised, and very, very collected and very, very elegant. So, Mrs. Chan, whew, I felt for her. I felt in my heart for her. Like, girl, I'm so sorry you're going through that. Why don't you go off and have yourself a nice little affair? Why don't you go on and get out of here, leave that copycat purse at home, and just go out and have yourself a nice little affair and some good food. Oh, God, and Maggie's performance was so damn good. It was so good. Wong Kar-wai usually has a lot of voiceovers in his movies and stuff, but not this one. So in this movie, the dialogue, of course, is helpful. But we get a look about what is going on inside of the characters by looking at them, by watching them, like, react to the info that they are and are not given. Their actions and what they choose to hide and pursue. Oh my God, in that moment when Mrs. Chan, she goes to knock on the door, she's like, okay, first of all, Mrs. Chan tells her husband, her faceless husband. So it's he's giving her another bullshit excuse. He's saying, like, I think he's saying stuff of like, oh, I'm not going to be home tonight. Why don't you like stay in and dine with the neighbors? And she's like, oh, but the neighbors aren't going to be in tonight for dinner. So I think I'll just stay at work late and just work a little bit late. She says that and it's like 4 o'clock. And I think she usually gets off like around 7. I don't know. But anyway, so he calls her a few hours before she gets off. She says, screw it. I'll just stay late. He's like, okay, cool. So Mrs. Chan comes home, right? I don't know what time she comes home, but she comes home and then she goes to knock on the next door, her next door neighbor's door. She goes to knock on it. Knock, knock, knock. Because she knows that that apartment, her next door neighbor's apartment, is supposed to be empty. But she hears a man and a woman talking through the wall. And I know that she knows the voice of her faceless husband. I know she knows his voice. Hello? So Mrs. Chan, she goes up and she knocks on the door when the faceless Mrs. Chow answers. And the look on Maggie's face, woohoo! Ooh, it tells so much. Like, when the door opens, she almost looks like she's about to get sick. Like, I think she was hoping in her heart that it wasn't her husband and that her two neighbors next door that own that apartment just sound like him. But then it's like set in stone, like that her husband is absolutely fucking cheating on her when the door opens and it's the faceless Mrs. Chow, the suspected mistress. Yeah, she's just like taken aback. And it's honestly like, yeah, like why the hell is Mrs. Chow home early, right? So that's the other thing. The faceless Mrs. Chow, she's always late getting home. She's always like, no, I took an extra shift. No, I'm going to be staying late. No, I have to stay late now. Now I'm staying late all the time at work. But then all of a sudden, the apartment's empty. Maggie is hearing voices through the wall that sounds like her husband. And then all of a sudden, the faceless Mrs. Chow is home early for once. Yeah, So Maggie's face, you know, was like in shock and like she was like uneasy and maybe even like a little queasy. And then she also gets like a little pissed and sassy and she starts to challenge faceless Mrs. Chow a little bit because Mrs. Chow was like, oh, I'm home early because I'm sick today. Yeah. And then Maggie's like, oh, you're home early because you're sick and you're alone, even though I heard voices. Oh, wow. That's so interesting. What are you sick with? Because I got something for you. Yeah. And of course, the faceless Mrs. Chow's like, no, thank you. I'm just going to go lay down now. Anyway, Maggie, she looked like she could have vomited, cried, and attacked the faceless Mrs. Chow right then and there. Oh, it was so good. And after the faceless Mrs. Chow closes the door and Mrs. Chan hardly walks, like she's hardly even begun to walk away from the door, you can hear the faceless Mrs. Chow say the words. You can hear her through the door say this, and I quote, it was your wife, end quote. What a bitch. Like these faceless, spineless motherfuckers. Oh my God. And then when Mrs. Chan was practicing confronting her husband, so like when Maggie and Tony were doing that scene, and she like really sinks into the moment and feels her entire reality while she's playing misbelieve, misbelieve, while she's playing make-believe with Mr. Chow. Woo, Lord. And then she starts crying and he's like, it's okay. It's not real. It's only rehearsal. But babe, it is real. God. And Mrs. Chan has to help her boss conduct his own marital affairs. Literally, like, affairs. Like, while she's navigating her own marital issues. God. Like, shit. Like, at least her boss had the decency to change out of his tie, a gift from his mistress, when he goes on dates with his wife. At least he goes on dates with his wife. Not me making excuses for this man, but like, but seriously, like, Mrs. Chan never gets a break from the affair at all. Like, she's just surrounded by constant reminders of her affair. And she's trying so hard to kind of like herd all of these cats to like stop all these rumors from getting out because that would also ruin her life. It's also just like, damn, like there is nowhere that she can go where she isn't constantly confronted with this affair. At work, she's reminded of the affair because she has to help her boss cheat on his wife. She can't hide in her apartment because she's next door to her husband's mistress. I think the only place that she can go to escape is like that little noodle spot. But even the noodle spot is like, you're eating these noodles because your rich ass husband has taken someone else out to dinner, babe. Nonstop. She's nonstop. Spiral. It's, ooh. And she's still poised throughout all of it. Please, lady. I could not. Anyway. So Tony Leung. One, he is a handsome guy. And Maggie is a beautiful lady. And they look so perfect for each other. God damn it. Oh my God. And the way Tony would look at her. Oh my God. My heart. Holy schmookies. Like I would get butterflies and I would want to cry at the same time. Only poetry does that. So Tony Leung. Okay. Tony Leung, he played Mr. Chow, right? He was the first person out of this controversial quad that found out about the affair. His wife was staying at work late, going on work trips. And the landlords were aware that Mr. and Mrs. Chow, they were always in frequent arguments, which also they like willingly just like willy-nilly shared that with their next door neighbor, Mrs. Chan. And these arguments would also sometimes end up with Mr. Chow leaving the apartment for a few days. Ooh, that's a big fight. That's a big fight. Okay, yet another thing I don't know if I've already said, but if I haven't said it, I'm going to tell you now. And if I have said it, remember earlier when I mentioned how voiceovers were a common thing for Wong Kar-wai movies? Well, this isn't Tony's first Wong Kar-wai rodeo. Or Maggie's, I think. I think that they've both, they performed multiple times. I think more than once with each other. Which I cannot wait to look into that because I have a lot of holes in my heart that need some mending. So Tony, he's been in other films with Wong Kar-wai where voiceover was used a lot to explain the inner thoughts of Tony's characters. And Tony was good at these voiceovers. He was really good at expressing himself via voiceover. But sorry, I'm just getting like a lot of like air trapped in my chest. Get out of there. Okay. Anyway, so in The Mood for Love, Tony, he needed to use his expressions and body language to get those super deep messages and thoughts across to the audience. And he delivered. Oh my God, he delivered. And I really liked how he had this like sweetness. He was like a little like awkward guy with a crush maybe. And we saw that a lot when he was around Mrs. Chan. And then, like, later on in the movie, I did feel like this dark streak, this noir, pensive, sexy streak. And Wong Kar-wai talks about that, too. Maggie and Tony's characters aren't really the heroes of the story, and their spouses aren't really the villains of the story. Their spouses are super sloppy and very inconsiderate, I will say that. And Mr. Chow and Mrs. Chan do try their best to suppress their spouse's bullshit and also their own inappropriate urges and try to keep all the gossip away. But one couple really isn't any better than the other, honestly. And these faceless spouses, that's such a cool little storytelling detail. Wong Kar-wai decided to make the spouses faceless for many reasons. Some reasons we've already talked about. Like, this isn't about making them the villains. This isn't about the affairs. This isn't about proving who is right and who is wrong. But, you know, I will be honest, I didn't like the faceless couple. I didn't like them. They were the bad guys to me. I'm literally pointing my finger right now. I'm pointing at them like, you're the bad guy. Because, come on, man, your neighbor, you're cheating on your spouse with your neighbor, a neighbor that you share a wall with? Come on. Buying your mistress neighbor the same purse as your wife? A purse that can only be bought out of town? Buying your paramour the same tie you get your husband? Not only are the gifts being given just echoes of what they gave their spouses, but they are shameless about it. Mrs. Chan and Mr. Chow have absolutely noticed the duplicate purses and ties. And the cheating spouses are spending time together in their own apartments. And they're going on trips at the same time and riding home using the same postage. Dude, but I know that at least Mr. Chow's wife at least told her paramour, her faceless paramour, that they shouldn't talk anymore if he isn't going to tell his wife. I'm not sure if she told her husband, but they argued a lot, and he knows. He knows. So they aren't necessarily the bad guys, but they are aggravatingly messy as hell. I will say that. And it's easy to root for Chow and Chan to run away together and hope they leave their cheating spouses in the dust. But Wong Kar-wai talks about how these characters have a darker side. And it took me a while. And it took me a while to put my bias for Chow and Chan aside to see if I could try to find this kind of darkness he was talking about. And I think that streak is them ending up in an affair, and they also have a secret love to hide, right? Right? That's like, you got something to hide. You did something. I was imagining, right? So another way that I helped get rid of my bias, I was imagining if I was Mrs. Chan's best friend, right? And I imagined her keeping me up to date on all of it, like beat for beat, like what's going on over there. And, you know, I imagine I would be angry because, like, who the fuck is cheating on my beautiful best friend, right? And then I would definitely be like, yeah, girl, like, maybe you should hang out with her husband and y'all should pair up and take them down. And then I would probably joke about stealing your husband's mistress's husband. But if it were the 1960s and the gossip stakes were as high as they were, I would be like, all right, girl, now you're going to run away with him. You're just as messy as your husband. Sorry, gotta say it. And, you know, after giving her a lecture, I would tell her to go for it, right? After making sure she was going to be okay. But for real, it is all a big mess. What a mess. And people do this shit all the time. Doesn't make it okay, but definitely common human behavior. One couple is not better than the other. One couple is more considerate than the other. But hey. Okay, so now we've talked a lot about the feel of the movie, thanks to Wong Kar-wai, Tony, and Maggie. Don't worry, we're still gonna be talking about them this entire fucking time, so don't worry about that. But now, let's talk about the look of the movie. All right, the aesthetics. I don't know what it is with me today. I don't know if it's because I'm sick or whatever, but I just can't talk like a normal person. And I probably won't be talking like a normal person anytime soon. So thank you for bearing with me. But okay, so I have a few little notes about aesthetics. Of course, duh, this movie is gorgeous. But there are also those storytelling details in the surroundings. And I think even in the costuming a little bit. I found some dots and I'm starting to connect. You know what I mean? Oh, and then there's this infamous Wong Kar-wai vibe everyone talks about. I know this movie took about 15 months to make. So long that the cinematographer, Christopher Doyle, had to peace out after a while because the project was running over schedule. And Christopher Doyle is definitely a name to remember when talking about Wong Kar-wai films. Because this is Doyle's sixth, you gotta pronounce that TH at the end. It's his sixth project with Wong Kar-wai. Wong Kar-wai admitted that he really relied on Christopher Doyle's skill and knowledge to get the shots he wanted. It was like Wong Kar-wai didn't really have to explain himself too much. Like, it was still definitely Wong Kar-wai's vision, but Doyle just understood and he just got him. He just understood him. You know what I mean? It's just a pairing that understood each other. So when Doyle had to step off of the project and future projects, Wong Kar-wai was a little challenged with having to explain and organize his visions to other DPs. Okay. I don't think I covered this. I don't think I ever really covered this. And if I have, oh well, we're going to be repeating some information. But what the hell is a cinematographer? I looked it up, babies. Don't you worry. So, a cinematographer and a DP are the same thing. And DP stands for Director of Photography. So, a cinematographer is responsible for the recording of a movie or whatever film, video, televised thing they're working on, right? So a cinematographer, they're in charge of the camera crews and the lighting crews, and they also work really closely with the director to make the director's vision come to life. So that's cool. So with Doyle gone, they brought in another talented cinematographer, Mark Lee Ping Bin. And the two DPs, Doyle and Ping Bin, they did such a great job at making it all blend together without really ever working together. I'm sure some super trained eyes can spot the differences, but I couldn't tell, and the whole movie looked beautiful, fellas. Speaking of looking good, Mrs. Chan, Maggie, she wears one ki pao that like made me gasp a little bit. One ki pao. She has a lot of ki paos that I was just like, oh, I think my favorite one was the one that she wears when she's going to pick up her husband from the airport. It kind of looks like she's wearing like this, like it has like oranges and blues. It's just the way that they look on the ki pao is like, it's almost like it's like heat sensitive in a way. It's not, but that's just what it looks like. It looks really cool. But she has one ki pao that actually made me gasp, like for real, a little bit. Once I looked up a few color and floral meanings, you know. In this movie, there are flowers and references to flowers everywhere. They are all over the key pals in the movie, along with the wallpaper, curtains, lampshades, or just like legit like vases of flowers everywhere. And fun little fact here, the original title of this movie was The Flowery Years. And it was also named like Secrets, A Story About Food, A Summer in Beijing. It had a lot of titles, but we'll talk about that later. But The Flowery Year, I can't say that word. Flowery Years. And as far as the possible names for the movie goes, I really liked the title A Story About Food, because the food in the story, that was also another storytelling visual detail for us. I'll get back to the key pow in a second, the one that made me gasp. So the food in this story is supposed to let us know what time of year it is. In Shanghainese culture, certain food dishes are only cooked at specific times of the year. For example, Maggie's character, Mrs. Chan, she's always being asked to join the landlady and her family and friends for dinner. One night, they made dumplings. And for those specific dumplings, you need specific vegetables that you can only get in the summer around June and July. So seeing the food types would let us know as the audience, like, what time of year it is. And seeing those dumplings, knowing that you can only get those vegetables in June and July, it would let us know that we are in summertime in June and July. There's a lot of food. There's a lot of food in this movie. Anyway, back to the florals. So, as I was researching this movie, I was obsessed with the key pals Maggie wore. I was wondering if any of them had any hidden meanings. And I think one of them did. Or it's a coincidence because meanings for things can change from place to place. So, Maggie's character, she wore about 20 different key pals on screen, I think. But in actuality, I think she wore closer to 40. A lot had to be cut from the film, but we'll talk about that in a second. So near the end of the movie, Mrs. Chan, her landlady, right? She's giving her a lecture. She's giving Mrs. Chan a lecture, giving Maggie a lecture. You know what I'm saying? Basically, the landlady is like, we have noticed that you're enjoying yourself and your husband is enjoying himself, but don't overdo it. And you need to tell your husband to cut the shit and spend more time with you. But she said it in a more like indirect, passive aggressive, bitch, you know what I'm fucking saying kind of way. So because of this lecture, Mrs. Chan tells Mr. Chow, who just invited her back to the red draped hotel for another night of, quote, writing. Yeah. Well, anyway, so Mrs. Chan, she tells Mr. Chow that she was lectured and that they should not see so much of each other. So then Mrs. Chan actually stays in for the night, right? Because usually, like, she's like out with him, helping him write this serial and or going out to get noodles. So instead of telling her landlady, oh, I'm going to go out and get some noodles, I'm going to go out and get some fresh air, she actually stays in the apartment and ends up just like watching the landlady and her friends play their usual games. And at this time, Mrs. Chan is just like, she's just floating around the room, lost in her thoughts, like a ghost of her own longing. Or like a teenager that would rather be out with her boyfriend instead of at the family reunion. But in this room, she is surrounded by flowers, mainly floral prints and a vase with big yellow flowers. But her key pal in this scene has a huge, huge, huge daffodil on it. Like, it literally takes up her entire like chest. Huge daffodil on it. Her earrings are also little flowers, little yellow flowers, and this all matches like the flowers in the vase. So they all look like, looks like she has like little daffodil earrings, and like those flowers in the vase could have been daffodils, right? The meaning, according to Wikipedia, of a daffodil, and I quote, is unrequited love, evanescent happiness, and deceitful hopes. Ooh. very fitting for that scene. I'm just saying, she does wear like the kipao more than once, and we do see it earlier in the film. But still, like, in that moment, she has the dress, she has the earrings, she's next to the vase, she's in the room full of flowers. And the whole flowery years kind of thing, it's supposed to speak to like a young woman, like living out in her like young woman era, her flowery blooming era. But also, I think it can also just be like flowery memories, just like when things were beautiful, when love was budding, when... So when she like grows up and she thinks about this time where she like had this affair, like it could be like a flowery, sad memory, maybe. Deceitful hopes. I have not heard those two words put together like that before, and it hit me. But I didn't have enough time to look up all the flowers I saw, but this... That was just so specific and relevant to that scene and how she must have been feeling. She just had all these super cool kipaos. I really liked the translucent ones. There's a really cool one she had that it was like a translucent black and white striped one. She also wore a see-through bright red kipao to the hotel. And I'm pretty sure they did it that night. They had to have bumped uglies that night. I think there is a deleted scene somewhere. I saw a picture of it and I couldn't find the full video. But in the picture, Chow and Chan, they're sitting on the bed in the Red Hotel. And Chow is in his boxers and undershirt. And Chan's, her clasps on her kipao are undone near the collar. Hello? All right. Speaking of deleted scenes, the movie that we can get our hands on is about an hour and a half long, but they caught 15 months of shooting. That's like 15 months of footage. And just for perspective, the Jack and Rose scenes in Titanic, that took about like 8-ish months to do. And that was the majority of the 3-hour long movie. So what happened to all this like footage from the past 15 months, right? Well, production was slow for many reasons. Like, investors needed to be replaced because there was an economic crisis going on in Asia at the time. Wong Kar-wai had to reshoot scenes over and over again for like his artistic vision. There were location issues. And I believe that the script itself, this could be a rumor, hello. Why do I keep saying hello this episode? Who am I? Anyway, so I believe the script itself was constantly changing because Tony, Maggie, and Wong Kar-wai, they were working together to put this story together to make it all make sense and be real. During production, like so around 1999, 2000, whatever, the movie is not done yet. It's not done yet. Has not been released yet. So the movie, or parts of it, whatever was finished at the time, was submitted into the Cannes Film Festival. And woohoo, it got in! Yay! Which added to the fire already under the post-production team's tails. The director of the Cannes Film Festival was like, finish it up quickly and also change the name. So at the time, the entire movie wasn't finished. Like parts of the movie was being shown to critics and other people. And the submission was like, I guess, like parts of the movie. So they were just like, yeah, it looks good. Go ahead and get it all finished up and change that name. So the original title translated to Age of Bloom, or like we talked about before, Flowery Years. But then they considered the other names we mentioned before. Then Wong Kar-wai decided to change it to In the Mood for Love after running out of title names and also after listening to the song In the Mood for Love, or I'm in the Mood for Love. It's a lovely tune. It's very romantic, very much a vibe. And a few of his other movie titles, the English titles were from pop songs. So, whoa, we have a winner, right? No, for real. This list of awards this movie and cast and crew have is so lengthy. It's so lengthy. And this movie has influenced other artists and other award-winning masterpieces like Everything Everywhere All at Once, for example. So yeah, there's a lot of deleted scenes. That just like makes me excited because I'm just like, are there scenes of them kissing? Did they hook up in the red hotel room? Because. Do not break into song. So I think it's when they go to the red hotel room the first time. And Maggie is in the window and Tony is like, whoa, right in front of her. Also, everything in this movie is framed. So when you watch this movie, everything is like in a frame. It's really cool. So they're being framed by the window and Maggie walks away from the window into the room. She goes like deeper into the room and then she goes to the bed. She walks towards the bed, looks at the bed. She stops. She turns back at Tony and she reaches for her collar where the buttons are. They boinked. That gives real boink energy. They did it. They had to have done it. Let's go on and move. Let's go on and move to the conclusion. I think my brain is actively shriveling up. There is so much to say and admire about this movie to the point to where I am too overwhelmed with what to say or how to even get started or even wrap it up. Honestly, I'd just rather say nothing and show you the movie, but that doesn't work for a podcast. But I really enjoyed this movie. So far, it's my favorite in the lineup for this category. Sorry, Titanic. And honestly, the more I think about Titanic, the more like awful I realize the writing is. But I still really feel defensive over Kate Winslet because I feel like people were like, this script sucks, Kate Winslet. Anyway. Sorry. But anyway, I do hope that at least one of these movies in this category has an ending where the people in love end up together, alive and well. Please. My heart just needs one out of the four. I feel like I should wrap this up with a gossip tale of my own. Okay. Locations and names have been changed to protect the people, and actors have been hired to portray. Thank you. Okay, so when I was in second grade, I don't know how old I was, who cares? But when I was in second grade, we used to live in a suburb and then we moved. But when we lived in the suburb, my mom had a best friend that I'm not sure she liked very much. Anyway, so this lady, my mom's friend, was like living diagonal from us, right? And every time my mom would come home, like the moment she would pull into the driveway, the phone rings and it's my mom's friend. We'll call her Cupcake. So Cupcake is like always calling my mom, always talking about, she was the town gossip for sure. Don't do anything in front of this woman if you don't want the entire town to know by lunch, okay? So I remember one time Cupcake, she came over and she was hanging out with us at our pool. I know, we had a pool. God, wow, took that for granted. But anyway, so she comes over and we're all hanging out by the pool. It's the 90s. So I want you to imagine 90s swimwear, 90s hair, and 90s skin damage from being out in the sun so much. And Cupcake is like, you know, talking to my mom. And she's like, and I have to do the accent. I'm so sorry. I have to do the accent. So my mom's name is, let's give her a fake name. Pumpkin. Okay, so my mom is Pumpkin and her friend is Cupcake. Okay, so Cupcake goes, Pumpkin, did you hear? And my mom was like, no, what happened? She goes, oh my God, Pumpkin, there was this little fat boy down at the McDonald's. He shoved a ball up his butt and he died. Excuse me? I have yet to see a news story about this. I have yet to even understand how a kid can take a ball pit ball. And, you know, I'm not going to get into detail, but that's painful. And pain is a message to the body to like stop or get away. And it's just like, I can't imagine. Till he died. He shoved a ball up his butt and died. I hear that. That is such an earworm of mine. I will be minding my own business in my adult life, 30 years old. I'm freaking out about bills. I don't know where money's coming from. you know, I have a partner that I deeply love and I have a cat that I love. And then boom, I'll just get an earworm and it's Cupcake going, oh my God, Pumpkin, did you hear? That little fat boy shoved a ball up his butt and died down at the McDonald's. Like, yeah, and we had one McDonald's, so it was the McDonald's, okay? And then, you know, the mega church came and now we have more McDonald's and Starbucks. But whatever. That's my gossip. I was going to share something else, but I think it's a little bit too serious. But that's a little bit about me. So, my dear listeners, I have a question for you. What is the longest amount of time you have had to keep a secret? I'm sitting on a few myself. Do you know how many times people have come to me and have been like, oh my God, I'm not supposed to tell anybody, but that shit stops with me and I carry it to this day, just so you know. I have been sworn to secrecy so many times, and sometimes I like to keep a few harmless secrets to myself, you know, of my own. You don't have to tell me what the secret is. Just how long have you been holding on to it? Hours? Weeks? Years? Lifetimes? Let me know. Okay, my darlings, that's it for me today. That's my first little step into the Wong Kar Wai universe. I have hardly scratched the surface of his work, and I think I hardly scratched the surface of In the Mood for Love. But I'm trying to keep these episodes on a little bit of the shorter side. I don't want to pull a James Cameron and scare my audience with big fat fucking episodes. So thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you had a good time. I hope I told you some things that you didn't know. And I will see you next week when we cover Corvette Summer. I know, you never heard of it. You never heard of it, but you can find it on YouTube. You can watch it for free with ads, and you should. Corvette Summer. That is what it's called. Corvette Summer. It has Mark Hamill in it. He took on this movie right after Star Wars. And it's insane. And I love it. And I cannot wait to talk about it next week. All right. Until then, keep those lips loose or tight, whatever you want. Stay safe and drink water. Drink some water. I'm going to drink some water right now. Bye.